Talking home renovation and repair next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you listening in today. And you are joined by Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, of the who's a senior project manager for the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Both these guys back once again to answer your questions. We'll zero in a bit on heating systems today and other fall tasks, but certainly we'll probably take a whole variety of things as we move along. Chad, great to see you again.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
And John, same for you.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Always fun.
Chad, you busy?
Very busy. It seems like the floodgates were opened, and everyone now wants to move forward with work, so feeling pretty optimistic at the moment.
Yeah, and I know, John, I know you've been busy with.
Yeah, absolutely, with some of the training and education that we host at the Energy Center, a lot happening.
Well, this time of year, we think about switching our, you know, the system over, the heating and the cooling system. Kind of maintenance should we be doing to make sure our heating, home heating system is in good shape when we need it?
Yeah, well, I guess we can always start with some of the simplest tasks, and that's the filter needs to be cleaned and changed, and just start with a new one at the beginning of the season. Really, it's for a homeowner, we're not diving too deep into those mechanics as we pull off that cover of that furnace. But if we want to do that, we can certainly just make sure there's it's clean inside. And if it's too dirty, again, we don't want to brush or clean too heavily in there without getting a service professional. But if you haven't had a service clean in a year, then it might be time. I usually recommend about every 2 years is a good time to get a service and a tune-up.
Okay. So get that filter changed. It's good. Yeah, I always keep, I usually buy six or a dozen filters, and I just leave them in the basement, and I write the date down on the filter that when I install a new one, and then I check and try and, you know, every few months, I look at the filter to make sure if, you know, if it's dirty, and I look at the date that I put it in. Okay, we'll jerk that one out, and there's another one right there.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, on the initial startup, we often get that little bit of an odor of some of the dust that may have settled on the heat exchanger, so we can expect that, and always good to have the windows open when we first do that startup, I think. So a mild day, pick a day like today where you can have some windows open and run that for a few minutes so we don't stink up the house. I think that's always a good move.
Okay. Well, I've you know, it's a new thing for us because we've got a geothermal unit installed in our home, and it worked great for cooling the house this summer, and this will be our first winter with the heating. So I'm really interested to see what our home heating bills are going to be in the winter. But we're told they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, no, a geothermal system certainly can bring those bills down, absolutely.
What's the average life of a furnace, do you guys?
Well,
you know, I'd say you would hope to get 20 years out of a furnace, and you know, sometimes they go 30 or 40 years, and sometimes they only last a little beyond 10 years. One thing that I will say is modern furnaces, much like a modern window and other things that we have, are more mechanically technical. They're things that can fail faster. They're circuitry, computer chips, things like that. And so you know, many of the warranties on furnaces, the extended warranties, are often 10-year warranties. So nonetheless, you know, we often, when we're involved in replacing them, they're often 20 to 30 years old.
Yeah. And by that time, the new ones are a whole lot more efficient, John.
Yeah, some of them, I guess they've had the 90% furnace around for some time now. So they certainly have been around for 20 years or maybe a little bit better. So as we get if we have a 90% furnace, which uses a PVC pipe to vent its exhaust gases out maybe the side of the house, then we know we have a 90-plus or 90% or better. And maybe the best are at 96 or so. So the increment becomes a little bit smaller as we get into that range. And if we have that 90-plus, we want to keep that well-maintained as long as we can. And certainly we want to get 15 years out of it, and some certainly go over that 20 mark with the right maintenance.
Paul in East Troy has a question for you guys, so let's go to Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to pull over here so I can talk with you in good shape. We have a home which is currently electric baseboard heat. We supplement with gas insert upstairs in our fireplace, and we have a pellet stove in the basement. My question is, how, I presume it's going to be pretty awful to convert to a forced air system, because obviously we're going to need you know, all the venting and that type of thing. But what are some things that we should consider in looking at making this switch?
Well, do you have a basement or a conditioned crawl space? And how many stories is the home?
Thank you. It's a ranch, one story, and we do have a basement, half of which is finished, half of which is kind of all my right. work area and so on and so forth. It's so there is space available, so
and
to speak.
How high is the ceiling in the finished part of the basement?
It is about 7 feet or so. Only went about 7 or 8 courses around, so it's a short basement, but it is finished, and I'm 6'2". I can walk around and only hit my head once or twice.
Okay. Well, I mean, that is one thing to consider, is that you're likely to end up with a couple of main plenums that would be installed for forced air. One would be the fresh air, and then you're going to have returns that would be installed all over the house. And generally, they're going to take up a minimum of, 5 to 6 inches if they put in a shallow depth plenum that would be designed for a basement that has limited headroom. But it's going to be pretty wide then, and you're going to have a huge kind of soffit that for this duct work, and in the unfinished area, it will be much easier to make this change and to install the duct work. And frankly, in a ranch home with an unfinished basement, it's much like doing it if the house had just been built. I mean, there's not a whole lot that you need access to other than the floor joist and that space. So it's possible for you to do it, but it should be well designed for distribution of the air and for balance. You are going to want returns in every room except for the bathroom and kitchen. Often don't have returns, but every other room is going to have them. Each bedroom should have a return. It is possible to do it. I would encourage you to invite over some, you know, qualified heating contractors and get some proposals on that.
Is the reason you want to make that switch, is it for air conditioning or to reduce costs or comfort?
Little of all three, actually.
Okay.
We have a room air conditioner in the bedroom, and that's it. Air conditioning would be nice to have. Mm-hmm. But primarily, I'm kind of looking at the cost of electric heat. We zone everything now. I mean, we shut off the back rooms and so on to for heating in the winter, and that seems to help keep costs down. But
mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, if you got natural gas, that's probably a good option for you.
Yeah.
There you go. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Paul, for calling. Appreciate it. And, yeah, that's a pretty, I mean, his situation, I mean, you know, if you got a 3-story house.
Right. It's going to be tough.
Then it's going to be tough. But a 1-story, the basement, should work. Luba in Madison, on to you. Hi, Luba.
Hi, and thank you. I have a question about filters. Now, I see two filters on the market. One is a loose mesh. The other is a kind of accordion felt kind of surface. And someone once said that if the felt ones or the accordion type make the furnace work harder, and the others are not as effective, but you have to use them, replace them more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that accurate? I just don't know.
Yeah, not necessarily.
What should you do?
The pleated filter, the accordion style that you've referred to, often can have low resistance because it has a huge or a large amount of surface area. And we would maybe go to that thick pleated filter. It might be 4 inches. It might be 6 inches in width. if we want to protect, or if we have allergies, or we just want to reduce dust, we use that filter to increase air quality for the occupants of the home.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to simply protect the furnace, then maybe a less expensive filter is fine to keep the dust and the big chunks out of the furnace cabinet and the blower motor. So we use that upgrade if we maybe have allergies, or if we simply want greater filtration for us, for the occupants of the home.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too, by the way. I'm giving the number. Let me do it right now. 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Helen in Big Bend. Helen, hello.
Hi. We have an oil furnace, an old oil furnace, but we had a new burner put in about 4 years ago.
Okay.
But every time it first starts up, there's a horrible smell like exhaust. And this last winter, because we usually burn wood and we don't use it very often. And then in January, when we came home from a trip, we turned it on and all the smoke alarms went off. We've had two repairmen come out, and they both seem to think it's just fine. There's no cracks in the heat exchanger, whatever that thing is. Do you have any ideas what might cause that? We were actually going to get a new furnace, and the guy that we were going to buy from said the one we have is fine.
Hmm. Yeah, having the smoke alarms go off is an indication of a pretty serious problem. I mean, does that just happen simply on when you haven't started it in a while?
That was the first time that ever happened. We hardly ever use our oil furnace because we're usually home and we always mm-hmm. burn wood. We just love the wood.
Yeah, we'll have to check that chimney out pretty closely to make sure that that system is working properly. Often there's a barometric damper on those oil furnaces that we want to make sure is operating. It swings open and closed. You might see it on the connector pipe.
They seem to think that was fine, too.
Seem to work fine.
Yeah.
Do you have carbon monoxide detectors in your home?
We do now.
Okay, good.
But they haven't gone off.
Okay.
We really haven't used the oil since then because I'm just, you know, I was afraid of it. And we've been home, so we didn't have to. So
I wonder if that might have stuck once, you know, having not been open quite a while, and then when they turned it on, it might have just stuck shut for a second or two, or for a few seconds.
It moves back and forth pretty freely.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Hard to say on startup and whether we're getting that odor through the venting, the chimney system, or through the air distribution system in the supply air. And if the heat exchanger looks good and the professional looked at that mm-hmm. Really rules out the air distribution system if he's accurate, and then we don't have...
Well, it comes out from the vents, the heat vents, when we smell it.
That's where you smell it there.
That initial blowing mm-hmm. doesn't seem to be there after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'm not going to have any more advice. You said you've had two separate ones. Take a look at it.
Yeah, we were even going to buy a new furnace from one of them, so I mm-hmm. thought that would be reliable.
mm-hmm. Well, sometimes on startup, we do get that odor, as I mentioned earlier. So we just want to have the windows open initially, and then, as Chad mentioned, have good carbon monoxide detectors there, and as well as smoke alarms. And if they're staying idle, then we just have to trust those professionals that it's on startup and everything's working fine.
One of them said sometimes not of all of that exhaust gets pushed out with the last blow, and it maybe it's residual from that. Is there any way of getting that last puff out? Or have you heard of anything like that?
With the blower motor and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm unaware of that and whether there's an opportunity on how we can remedy. You know, we're going to have to rely on the professionals in the field to take a close look at that.
And if you did change, if you were going to put a new furnace in, I'm just calling on my own experience here. At previous home, I had fuel oil, and when the furnace kind of kicked out, I switched over to natural gas. And that was a pretty simple process.
Yeah.
So it's something you might consider if you do, in fact, ever change that furnace, you might just want to consider gas.
Yep. Certainly there's energy savings and dollar savings to be had by switching to natural gas.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And I was surprised at how, I mean, we were able to get the, at no cost, essentially, get the remaining oil out of the tank and the tank removed. It was I was quite pleased. I thought it'd be a lot more difficult than it turned out to be. Uh-huh. Bill in Jefferson, it is your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
Ironically, I just had a service technician out last night to look at my furnace. Late last year, I was having problems with it, and the warm weather, I just kind of put it off, and came out, inspected it, and found out I had problems with my chimney, and that was the root cause. But told me I need to have it inspected like once a year because it's fuel oil. What do they look at when they're inspecting a furnace?
And I guess an oil furnace in particular you're asking for. So
yeah.
There are, I guess, one, we start with general cleanliness and leaks, right? So if we have drips, okay. So we're looking at the fuel supply coming in. We're looking at electrical connections to make sure things aren't corroded and they're making solid contact. They may take a look at the nozzle that's being used, maybe on the transformer side, little bit on the electrical, on the transformer, looking at voltage. Then they're looking at flame characteristics to make sure that the flame is blue, nice and hot. It's not impinging within the heat exchanger or touching other surfaces. So it's a variety of flame characteristics. And then, of course, the exhaust side, you know, is things venting appropriately, which sounds like maybe there's some concerns there with your chimney.
Yeah, that's what we determined the problem was. A bird or something was making a nest up there, and so it was kicking out an awful lot.
Yeah, that was one of my concerns for the previous caller, to make sure we didn't have anything like that happening with any types of odors that you're going to get as a result of a plugged chimney, but it seemed very intermittent or only on startup on that last caller.
Mm-hmm. All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Taking a look at your home today, zeroed in a bit on home heating systems, but we'll cover other areas as well as we visit with Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and John Viner, senior project manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Brittany DeAnda, our on-air producer, she's answering the phones for you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with our guests, John Viner and Chad Spade. And really pleased to have you listening in today. And I hope if you have a question as we move along, give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. Email talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Email from Jacob. I just bought a house with a wood and fuel boiler in the basement. Considering fuel prices, can this run off of wood only? Any advice on that? So you got a wood and fuel boiler system.
Yeah, I guess I would think that it could, Larry, but I'm not sure. You're going to have to check with the manufacturer, take a look at that. I wouldn't be able to say what fuel type would be needed in that system.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Okay, let's go to Judy in Milwaukee then. Hi, Judy.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have an interesting thing happening. When I have turned on my air conditioning, I get two rooms that get musty, like they are not getting correct air exchange. I don't notice it in the winter when I'm heating.
Okay, so on air conditioning, when the fan blows, we get a little musty smell. And sometimes that might be the air conditioner coil, which we'll call the evaporator coil on the inside of the home, not your unit sitting on the outside. But the evaporator coil does have water that sits in a pan in that air conditioner coil and doesn't always drain. So there may be some mold, or maybe it's dirty and there's a little bit of that being blown. That doesn't necessarily answer why it's only two rooms and not throughout the whole house, but that seems to be the case for you?
It is just the two back bedrooms. So I wondered if something was not balanced right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you definitely tie the musty odor to when the air conditioner is running, or is it perhaps a summertime mustiness?
It is. the air conditioning doesn't have to be actually putting out air.
Okay.
For it to happen, it's like those two rooms don't clear or something.
Well, what side of the house are they on? Like, are they the north side or
the south side?
South side. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you have a full basement underneath that room.
Yes.
So a full basement.
I have a dehumidifier running in the basement, and the basement is not musty.
Uh-huh, but you smell it maybe when you put your nose down by those registers where the air blows out. And
You notice it as soon as you walk into the room.
Okay, so it's... Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Stagnant.
No bathrooms adjacent to those rooms? Or
no.
Okay, well, then it may or may not be tied to the air conditioning system, and there may be... whether it's rainwater or something staying moist, at first, sometimes in the ductwork, water can get in and stay, but it sounds like it's permeating throughout the room, which is going to be a little harder to nail down on where exactly that is. But we certainly want to do that, and I guess we would start with the grading on the outside of the house, and we have to walk around the room. If anybody's going to do a little bit of a evaluation or analysis, that's where they're going to start. They're going to take a step back from that house and make sure when it rains, no water has a chance to run towards that foundation, and then find its way wickets up the concrete or get moist down at the sill plate on top of the foundation and work into the rim joists. So we want to do a visual observation not only on the outside of the house, go into the basement and look at the rim joist to make sure that's clean and dry. Sometimes we'll find fiberglass insulation in the rim joist. Somebody wanted to insulate above the foundation wall in the basement, and they'll install fiberglass up against the rim joist. And if you have that, please remove that and look behind there and see if we find any mold or moisture staining there. Often that's a common place for mold to grow right underneath that room.
Okay.
Yeah. It's also possible there could be a tiny leak or minor leak that is wetting the walls. And you know, you may not be seeing any evidence of it, but you're smelling the evidence of it potentially.
You're thinking, Chad, a roof leak maybe.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Possible.
Coming near the eave, yes.
No,
okay. It's not a flat roof, but it's a ranch, and it has a sort of a low pitch, so that's a possibility, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, it's worth a look.
All right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Judy. Appreciate your call very much. And we have Danya with an email wondering, what's your opinion on duct cleaning, especially after interior remodeling?
Well, certainly if there's ever a time that you might justify or consider duct cleaning, it could be after a remodel, though hopefully your contractor, or if you're doing it yourself, you're taking steps to block up the return venting in your house so that your air handling system is not sucking in dust. Duct cleaning is something that I find in general to be somewhat mysterious and overrated, because you know, the ductwork in a home is recirculating the air in the house, and it's possible that you have an intake for fresh air, so it's bringing in some fresh air, but then your filter is constantly filtering the air prior to either cooling it or heating it. So generally, if there is air moving freely through the system, there shouldn't be a lot of opportunity for things to get really dirty in that ductwork. But of course, if you have had remodeling, then it's possible that some debris and dust has gotten in there, and so there might be a need to do it. I would say that if you do it, it's something that would be done due to an event like that where there was a lot of dust or mess and you want to clean it out just to have a nice fresh start. But it's not something that I would consider to be an ongoing maintenance, need. And one of the best ways to assess it or just to find out what's going on is to open one of the return vents or a supply and stick your hand down in there and, you know, wipe the bottom of the duct and see if there's a lot of dust.
Yeah, I think there's always a lot of dust down there. Chad. Those ducts do get pretty dirty and accumulate the dust. And I agree with Chad. It's not something we do on a routine basis. But again, from a remodeling project or health concerns within the home, and you're just trying to eliminate the options, you're trying to narrow down what might be causing you to become ill, allergies, or just have immune deficiencies that you're trying to remedy, or you're trying to make yourself a little bit healthier, that's certainly a recommended step. But those are the types of events that, like Chad said, remodeling or health concerns, that we'd make that recommendation.
All right, let's move on to Glenn in Milwaukee then. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, I've got maybe three or four questions. First one has to do with radiators. The house is about 80 years old, so it has radiators. And I'm wondering, is it advisable to drain those things occasionally?
You know what? I don't know on that one, on the radiators and on the boiler side. Chad, have you had anybody take that on in a retrofit?
We will, you know, drain them out when we're having to alter the system. You basically have to take the water out of the system to move a radiator or to add a radiator. So it is something that is done whenever that happens. But I've never heard that it's something that you might want to do for some sort of maintenance reason.
Just leave it alone.
Yep.
How about the expansion tank? How many times do you drain that thing? It's quite a sizable expansion tank that this thing has.
I think we need a professional HVAC person, professional, to give us a call and give us a little lowdown on the boiler side on that maintenance, because I'm falling short on experience there.
Yeah, I mean, there again, it's what I would recommend is that if you're have concerns about this, and as we've been talking about previously, it's good to have some routine maintenance, kind of a checkup done on your heating system. And so I would recommend having a professional heating contractor who specializes in boilers to come in and look at your system. And make sure before you hire them that they are expert in the particular type of boiler you have. I mean, some are steam boilers. If you have that overflow tank, I imagine it's a hot water system. So, make sure that that's an area that they are knowledgeable in. And then, the technician should be able to look it over. And I would recommend that you be there when they do it so that you can ask some of these questions to learn more about your particular system, because, we have certainly worked on some homes that have these expansion tanks, and it's part of the system. You can understand when you heat up water, and it needs more. You have essentially a closed system, but when you change the temperature of something, it expands and contracts, and so you need that there for it all to remain balanced. And that again is just part of the system.
So it does fill up with water because you have to drain the radiators every year to get the air out of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think Chad's advice on getting a contractor in there to take a look at it is probably a pretty good one. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Glenn. Oh, did you have another question?
No, that
pretty well covers it.
The other questions you can't answer anyway.
Yeah, okay. Sorry about that.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Clyde and Hurley, you are next. Hi, Clyde.
Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, I'll preface this by saying I am under a Wisconsin weatherization program last year, November to be exact. They put in a new furnace and a high-efficiency one, and ever since November through March is the last I checked it, my gas has been a little bit less than the year before. But my electric bill is much higher. So whatever I saved in energy and gas, I more than paid it more in electricity. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess the first thing that comes to my to mind is, are you running the furnace fan on a continuous basis or just?
No, they, you know? I did complain and they came back, the furnace people came back and adjusted it a little bit and they put a digital, thermostat in. That helped a little bit, but not near as much. And they also added insulation mice, ceiling prior to that too.
So they adjusted the fan speed, but I'm going to reiterate, you know, that blower isn't blowing constantly through the house to even out temperatures.
Okay. No.
And then we just have to, whether it's related to the work that was done through the weatherization program or are there other things that might have changed within the house?
And nothing has changed.
Nothing else has changed.
And, I'll have to ask, tell you this. They checked with me, Wisconsin Weatherization Program checked with me this summer, and I told them I wasn't quite satisfied. Then they said, oh, we'll have to have somebody else call you on that. I have yet to receive a call from that party.
Okay. Maybe it's worth another call. Generally, they're pretty responsive to take care of those things. Those quality control issues, I know the weatherization programs take very seriously. So I hope that if the ball got dropped, I wouldn't hesitate to give them another call and find out what the, maybe dig a little deeper into your concerns.
Right.
I would, you know, certainly do that.
It's kind of hard to imagine why the electricity would be higher with a new gas furnace.
Well, you know, part of it is that a lot of times with a newer furnace, they're designed to run more but the heat, you know, they don't kick out as hot of a air, and so the fan is probably running more on a newer furnace, and that this is an example of. I mean, I will often try to talk my clients into buying a furnace that has a direct current fan because they consume a lot less electricity, and it's a good example of how that's really often an investment worth making. And I'm not sure where the weatherization program comes down on that, you know, what they...
That would sound more like, because there's no question about it, because I've got it all down in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And every month through March has been that way.
What type of furnace did they replace?
They replaced probably a 15-year-old. It wasn't a high-efficiency one, no.
A gas, but still the same fuel type.
Right, it was gas, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Chad's idea there of maybe the fan running a bit more often.
But ideally, they weatherized the house to make that home a little more efficient, right? That was the goal, and that furnace should run a little bit less overall. But maybe air conditioning, you probably do not have air conditioning is my guess. Maybe they added on a higher speed. They dropped it down a little bit, sounds like, and maybe you've noticed a little blip on your fuel bills that way after they've made that adjustment. But there's not much more consuming electricity that you're going to really be able to notice on your bills. No matter how closely you track those kilowatt hours, it's that fan motor that's drawing the bulk of that power. And the only way to know a little bit more is ideally we would attract the hours and the runtime. But do you know what kind of amount are you thinking it's running more? I'm just kind of curious if you've got the data in front of you.
Just to give you some idea, in November the kilowatt hours prior was 7.8. Now it's 9.1. The next one, then 7.7. Now 10.9, 8.9, 10.9.
Yeah, these are what, kilowatt hours per degree day?
Right. Well, they're kilowatt hours.
Yeah.
I also have for the month plus, mm-hmm. plus two or minus two or something like that. So
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Sometimes there's just unknowns that take place in that house outside that furnace, whether if you got outbuildings and electrical use. Just sometimes it's hard to diagnose actually to see if there's if you got a well pump might be running a little bit more. Lots of options and hard to narrow down here on the show.
Well, I think your advice about calling again and getting them back out, I think is really what should be done. That's probably the only way you're going to figure it out.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll be accommodating.
And I'm sure. And I assume that you've been keeping the thermostat at a, you know, pretty much the same.
Exactly 71, and my wife passed away 2 years ago, so it's just been myself. So electricity bills have been down, but that's...
Yeah, still, give them a call and see what... get them out there, and hopefully they can get something fixed, Clyde. Appreciate your call very much. And I have to apologize for my cold. I've picked up a cold kind of over the weekend, I guess. So occasionally you might hear a cough or... me sounding more like Carl Schmidt than my own voice. So my voice has gotten a little deeper here today and was yesterday as well. So with that apology, I'll move on to another caller. Jim in Pulaski, it is your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. I have a Unico air handler in my attic, and in March I noticed in my overflows from my catch pan, I had water running. So I went up there to check it, and my air handling unit was full of moisture. All my outlets were plugged, as my return air was also, there's a piece of styrofoam in there. I put a better seal around, there was a few little holes around that return air thing. I taped those off. And but I, you know, it's just like raining in there, so much that the trap filled up with water, froze and cracked. So my question is, first of all, I need to prevent the moisture from condensing up there. And one thought I had was, should I be plugging up the drain hole from outside so that I wouldn't get a backflow of cold air? Should I add antifreeze in the trap after I service it? And should I possibly even put a light bulb up in there to keep it warm? Or is there another method that I should look better at sealing my return air duct?
So you have your furnace is up in the...
I have hot water heat. So my air conditioning unit is an independent unit up in my attic. It's a Unico system.
Okay. So it's basically being... There are issues with that system in the wintertime? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, the unit was down and, you know, winterized in fall. And I noticed I have overflow pans in case something would happen up there. And the pipes go in my garage. And I noticed there was water dripping from there. And that's when I went up and looked inside the unit. And it basically was raining in there. And filled up.
Well, you know, that sounds like a problem, you know, with humidity escaping from the house and then possibly, you know, condensing literally onto that metal air conditioning unit.
Yes.
And so that's a sign that we need to do something to reduce the amount of moisture, humidity that's escaping from the house up into the attic. And we might also consider, generally it's best practice for a unit like that to be in a semi-conditioned space where it's, you know, isolated or it's more connected to the thermal envelope than just being up there in the attic. And able to have issues like this happen, where it's really part of the exterior rather than connected more to the interior climate.
I have a ranch-style house.
Right.
Is your when you said hot water heat, is that hot water forced air, so that air handler is running up there, or is it radiant heating hot water?
No, this is, I have a regular boiler, and so it's a separate unit system altogether.
Okay.
All right. So
one's in the basement, one's in the attic.
Yep, and they're not intertwined with
No.
Forced air, hot water system.
No.
Okay. So plugging that return, knowing that that switch is going to be off and putting a barrier in the cold air, you have, is it one central cold air return in a hallway somewhere?
Yes, and there was a piece of like a styrofoam in there, but then I noticed a few little slots around the frame of it, so I put some of the foil tape over that. This is after the fact, so I don't know what's going to happen this winter, but it's a... You know, I don't want, it's that the duct isn't metal, it's that
flexible
kind of plastic type, for lack of a better word.
So you got a ranch house and all your warm air supplies are in the ceiling?
No, all my discharge for my air conditioning are in the ceiling.
Oh, that's right, for the air conditioner. So they have some magnetic covers that can go on there, they're metal grills. And you can generally buy them at most hardware stores. It's a magnetic cover that even so in the winter when that air conditioning system's not being used, and that's when we're having the problem and the wetness inside that unit, it even makes sense to put those white magnetic covers over the registers, and that'll prevent that movement of house interior moisture, which we certainly want to keep under control, because I haven't come across that too much, so it makes me suspicious that maybe there is a lot of moisture in your home, and maybe there's ways to bring that under control first and foremost, and then to prevent it from moving up into that air handler system. Now, this doesn't necessarily address the frozen trap, which water will sit in there over the winter, and I think the best way to maybe handle that is to, if there's a way to drain that out and just not have that trap freeze, not have the water in the trap, and if there's a place to, usually they're all glued together and there's not necessarily an easy way to drain that trap so we prevent that freeze. But ideally, when we come to use that air conditioner in the spring, it should be thawed, and as long as it's not busting a pipe, freezing that trap might not really be a big concern.
There you go.
And the idea about having a light bulb to heat up the space, I mean, that's really only going to be effective if, you know, you have a well-sealed enclosure around that unit, because otherwise that heat is just going to dissipate into the attic. But I do think that, I think if you just were able to enclose the area around it so it's still serviceable, legally serviceable, on whatever side you have access to the, you know, to the various places where someone would have to service the unit, but otherwise seal it up so that it is enclosed and more interacting with the heated space during the winter months, I think you'll find that these problems will largely go away.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry, John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. You can join in with a question as we visit with them about homes, and zeroed in a lot today on home heating systems, and that's great. Other questions could work as well. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Someone with a three-story house with a basement and a problem with cat urine, cat smells from the basement, even though the cats seem to be not using, are actually using the cat litter boxes, cleaning those litter boxes regularly, wondering if maybe there was a cat from an earlier home owner or what, and how to deal with that sort of thing. You guys ever have that issue?
Well, you know, odors can really be a problem in some homes. I'm not sure. You know, we find that when humidity levels rise in a home, a lot of odors get released. If there are carpets, then that they can certainly trap a lot of urine that may have inadvertently found its way into different parts of the home. As far as the air handling system, redistributing odors from the basement, you know, one way to just kind of experiment with that is to possibly shut off the return intakes in the basement to see if that has an impact on reducing the odors that seem to reside in the basement, because that will redistribute potentially those odors from the basement to the rest of the house. So that might be something to play around with.
Okay. Let's go to Jonathan in Galesville. Thank you
for
calling. Hi.
Hey, I got an interesting project. My wife and I are converting a 100-year-old granary into a house. And it's always been our dream to be not only debt-free, but to live utility-free or free of public utilities, to live bill-free. And so we've decided in order to do this, we're going with solar electric, and we want to also harvest wood off our own property for our heating. So to make it possible, we've decided to go with a modern wood cook stove. And the granary is two stories tall. We're going to have a basement underneath that will not be heated, but the cook stove, of course, will be on the first floor. In the dining kitchen area, and we're going to use that to heat the house as well as heat our hot water and to cook all our food. Because it's an old structure, we had to go with spray foam insulation in order to meet the EPA requirements for emissions anyway. So we're doing a spray foam insulation, and the question I have is, are we going to have a problem with fresh air in the winter time when the building is closed up and sealed up with the spray foam insulation and we're burning wood inside on the first floor? Or do we have to find some way to introduce fresh air into the wood stove for combustion?
Well, we always need a ventilation system, first and foremost, one for our combustion appliances. If it depends on the volume of the space and the volume of the granary that you're converting and of the home. And some combustion appliances can manage fine depending on the volume. And, of course, house tightness comes to play in there. But my first reaction when you were talking about fresh air and am I going to get into problems, I'm thinking about the occupants. For you living in the home,
right,
you need a ventilation system to manage odors, moisture, and introduce fresh air. That's a given. So you always are going to need a plan for that, whether you use spray foam or another insulating material. When it comes, so we have to go there, take care of the personal space and the environment for the occupants. When it comes to the wood stove, it's possible that you're going to run into a problem. I assume that this is a new wood cook stove?
Yes, the Kitchen Queen is a UL-listed modern-built wood cook stove.
Uh-huh. So you're going to have to fall back to the manufacturer's instructions and see if there's a way and a means to introduce that fresh air. And if there's ever a home that's really going to require that, if it's accessible or recommended by the manufacturers, certainly for that home or that homeowner that's going out of their way to make their building tighter than average. And we can certainly get that with spray foam used as an insulation, but it's not a guarantee either. It depends on the applicator and other junctures in the home that may or may not have received the spray foam, and they could also be leaky. So it's
right.
We can assume the house is going to be pretty darn tight, but we don't know that for sure. So you need a blower door test to really get that performance measurement completed to give you an idea of where you stand and have a professional really interpret that number for you once he does that test.
Right. I was more concerned about the health of the occupants rather than necessarily how well the stove would burn. And what exactly would we do if the building is super tight to introduce, you know, fresh air or to make sure that we've got a good living space, it's breathable?
So there's a couple styles of ventilation systems, and maybe one is called a balanced ventilation system. So that's a heat recovery ventilator or energy recovery ventilator, two separate systems, but they're classified as being balanced, which means the fresh air that you bring in is equal to the flow that's being exhausted. And this one box, this one unit is going to create that balance and bring fresh air in and recover some of the heat that's lost from the conditioned air in the home as it's being exited to the outside. So there's a little more efficiency gains with a balanced ventilation system than there is with an exhaust only, which is simply a high-quality bath fan in the bathroom, kitchen, or maybe even centrally located somewhere where we're able to put on a humidistat or other timer or control where we're simply exhausting air to the outside without a dedicated intake. A lot of homes function just fine with an exhaust-only ventilation system that's designed to run on a continuous basis, so you know you have it when you want it, and you can leave it run long hours, and the electricity consumption is very small. But as we design a new home, I might suggest to look closer at the balanced ventilation system, which really has some additional features for filtration. Now you have a dedicated intake that can be filtered. So now the air coming in isn't relied on. Is it coming from my attic, a crawl space, or through a window? You're actually dedicating the spot where the fresh air is coming in, and you place that intake vent not next to the driveway and the car exhaust and the garbage can, but you put it someplace where it's going to be a little fresher. And then you have an opportunity to add accessories to that heat recovery ventilator and balance system to clean the air if you so desire.
Do that in the basement or the attic, or you can install those anywhere in the house?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be dependent on the design of the duct system, how accessible it is to the rooms that we want to bring fresh air. Often it's to the bedrooms we bring fresh air. We pull our stale air from our bathrooms and our kitchens.
There you go. Chad Spade and John Viner, our guests. They'll be with us until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at home renovation and repair, zeroing in a little bit today on heating systems, heating and air conditioning systems, and we've had lots of questions in that area. Certainly, if you'd like to join in, the number's 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. And Jerry in Shell Lake has been waiting a while, so let's go to Jerry. Hi, Jerry. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, thank you. I heat my house with wood, and my insurance company insists that I line my cement block chimney with ceramic or metal. The whole thing would be maybe 8 feet. I'm not sure. Can you drop in blocks, or how would I do that?
I guess lining that chimney, you have that option, as you said, ceramic or a metal chimney liner, which generally I see a metal chimney liner. If you can, it's 8 feet. Ideally, if it's a straight run, it shouldn't be all that difficult to drop that metal liner down that chimney and connector to that wood stove.
And I need to poke a hole in the metal for my 6-inch stovepipe, that type of thing?
Well, I think there'd be adapters, so you would drop a liner down, and I'm not 100% sure whether it would be a flexible liner or maybe a solid steel liner for that wood stove, but then you're gonna make an elbow down at the bottom where it's going to come out of that cement block chimney, and then you're going to get the right fittings to match up to your wood stove.
I see. And the ceramic would be pretty difficult to drop them in there piece by piece, I suppose.
Yeah, I haven't done that or seen that done, so I guess I would price that out and talk to a professional on the pros and cons of either one. It seems to me like a metal 5-foot section, or if it's a straight pipe that we can drop down in sections, seems like an easy way to go.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you for calling, Jerry. And on to Bob in Madison. Bob, hello to you.
Hi, well, thanks for taking my call. This is for the gentleman from Hurley. I'm associated with the weatherization program, doing some training and whatnot, and I'm very aware that in the weatherization program, they do put in spot ventilation, just like John was talking about a couple of callers back, for continuous ventilation, according to ASHRAE 62.2, and sometimes that may just be over-ventilating the house, and it's quite possible that that's maybe one of those causes for the gentleman's not seeing any really energy reduction, even though understood that the energy penalty is fairly small. If it's overvented, that may be a particular cause. But in any case, if that person could get back to his weatherization contractor or agency, I'll just make sure that we do follow up on that, not even from, just for the fact that it's not getting back to him beforehand, but also those houses where we don't really see energy savings are really interesting to study to see just, why things aren't working as planned.
Oh, so good points.
All right, yeah. Thanks, Bob. That bath fan might be running full time or intermittently, but it certainly is designed to run full time, and that over ventilation may be drawing in additional conditioned air that now that furnace has to make up.
Mm-hmm.
Quite possibly, John. And you know, way up north there, sometimes those dampers just stay open. So even if it's on a timed situation where it's just running, you know, maybe every 20 minutes per hour, the vent may be stuck open, the damper, and then through stack effect and whatnot, we're getting a lot of air being pulled out. So
yeah.
A couple things to look at.
All right. Excellent. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. All right. Some good tips there. Let's go to Billy in Wetoka, Minnesota next. Hi, Billy.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been, you know, there's these people going around from, it's called Innovative Energy Solutions, and it's a Minnesota company, and they have like a free dinner, and then they talk about their products for insulation. And I'm wondering if you heard about any of them, because it's stuff like they've got, it's kind of a blanket like material that's supposed to be pure aluminum on both sides, and then it has something in between that makes it sort of like bubble wrap, and it's supposed to do all these amazing things for insulation, and they have a paint that's supposed to have ceramic in it that it's not actually called a paint, it's called thermal coat. And I'm wondering if you've heard about any of these things. And
okay.
Yep. We have heard about them. And certainly one of the types of heat loss that they're trying to address with these products is radiant heat loss. And we do have some products that we do use. Aluminum foil is sometimes a part of the overall envelope of a well-built home. We do have to be careful about what impact that's having on our, whether we're creating another vapor barrier in a home. But I'm a little skeptical about some of these products you are describing, not necessarily this particular company, but I mean, the approach sounds a little dubious, and typically if the claims are too good to be true, then they are too good to be true. It is not possible, for example, to my knowledge, to be able to achieve, you know, high R values with a thin film of material, which is part of the allure of the products that you're describing. It is, though, possible to help to reduce radiant heat gain and radiant heat loss in a building. And, that's kind of what those products are primarily looking to do. I'm not sure. I think the best way to approach improving your energy efficiency at a home is to tighten it up, to deal with air sealing, and then to the best of your ability to then add R value using materials that are tried and true. And if you do that, if you handle your home, or if you approach a home improvement energy efficiency from that perspective, I think you're more likely to see a payback both in energy savings and in the added comfort that you should enjoy in your home. So I would stick with the more traditional approach, but I remain open-minded that there will be new materials that will, allow us to accomplish more, as we move forward. But I'm a little skeptical right now on that.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Greg in Green Bay, on to you now. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I've got it's about a 12-year-old ranch. It's about a 1,600 square foot ranch. And as long as I've lived in this home, I've had in the winter, when it gets, you know, really cold, obviously the air is really dry, I get a ton of moisture around my windows. And, you know, I've asked a person or two, and, you know, I get a couple different answers, but I'm just kind of seeing if your guest has any kind of sage advice. I have a 4-inch intake that feeds, pulls in cold air, and goes into my furnace, and then it's an 8-inch pipe there. So my, you know, I'm curious if maybe I need to get a bigger intake, or, you know, what, you know, I think the house is insulated pretty well. It doesn't seem to be, you know, any drafts or things like that necessarily. But I'm just curious what your guess, you know, comment would be.
Okay,
so. Greg, this moisture on the windows becoming a big enough concern that we're maybe we're getting mold or staining on the windowsills, or is it just on occasion that we have this?
No, I have staining. I definitely have a mold on the window, you know, a staining on the windows for sure.
Yeah, that's often can be a difficult one to solve in a very cold climate that we live in as it gets really cold outside, but not that we haven't solved these in the past. And some of the common approaches are, you know, if we've got heavy curtains that we pulled over the window, that's going to keep that glass surface much colder in the wintertime, raising the chances of condensation. So the overarching goals is to keep that window warmer. So we can think of a number of strategies to keep that window warmer. It may not, in the deepest part of the window, deepest part of the winter, not even having a deep setback or no setback on your thermostat will keep the house warmer, hence keep that window warmer. It's going to take some energy often to solve this problem, and we just have to address that. So keeping the window warmer or lowering the humidity in the house is, you know, the next approach. And sometimes we bump into the problem where homeowners, they can't have it any drier in the house because they do get sore throats in the evenings, and they're sensitive to dryness. And that's where the difficulty comes is creating that balance of humidity levels to reduce moisture concerns and mold growth, but also not irritate the people living in the house.
Right.
And that balance, as I've said, can become a little more difficult. Dehumidification, you have a little bit of an intake in your cold air return. We don't always know if that's working or working effectively. So just the mere presence of that fresh air intake doesn't really mean a whole lot sometimes. When you actually get to testing a few hundred of these, we just know they don't often work well. So they have to be designed appropriately, and we have to know that airflow is moving there. And that could be simply when the furnace is on, find something, smoke or paper, toilet, something thin at the intake of that to know that at least we have some movement. There are other specialty tools to actually quantify that flow, which might be worth obtaining. And then you would maybe speak to somebody from the Home Performance with Energy Star program in Wisconsin through the Focus on Energy initiative, and have someone come out and provide a little thorough assessment if you wanted to really quantify those numbers.
Yeah, I have thought about having somebody come in and do a professional assessment. I'm just, you know, guess that's probably what it's sounding like you're recommending more than anything.
Are you watching humidity levels, relative humidity in the house? And
yeah, and it's you know, I want to say it's usually up around 50-60%.
In the summertime or wintertime?
Winter.
In the wintertime, yep. So we have to bring that down lower. That's a clear signal to me that no matter how good your windows are, in the really coldest parts of the winter in Wisconsin, you're probably going to get some condensation on your windows, and you're maybe even getting it elsewhere that we don't want it. So 50-60% relative humidity, we need to bring in a little more fresh air. Well, and I'll back up. Maybe it's not bringing in fresh air, but it's finding what the sources of moisture are and first eliminating or reducing that source of moisture in the house. And no question, you got to address that.
Yeah. What's the percentage, what percentage of humidity, you know, in those kinds of situations would be better in the wintertime?
So when it's really cold outside, we want the relative humidity to be lower. And let's say it's 0 degrees. We're in the dead of winter. There are homes that can handle 35-40% relative humidity, but other homes will, from a durability and moisture standpoint, but there are other homes that really need it around the 20% mark to prevent window condensation. If you have a single pane window, or something that's a poor grade, you're going to need that relative humidity pretty darn low, or the temperature in the house turned pretty high up to prevent any type of condensation.
Yeah. And they are pretty poor windows. That's another story in itself, but they're not the greatest windows, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's classic in that there's often more than one cause for these problems. Yeah. Poor windows and high humidity. Now we got a couple things to maybe be concerned with.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have on our Facebook page from Linnea, renovated my kitchen and bath complete with stone tile flooring, but mistakenly didn't use the warming coils underneath. The tiles above are unbearably cold for your feet. I have an old river house. Basement is fieldstone walls and dirt floor. Anything you could suggest to correct her hindsight?
Well, you know, there are a number of things that might be considered to help to reduce heat loss and thus bring up the temperature in that basement. We do have to be careful with the old fieldstone foundations. I mean, a lot of moisture tends to pass through them. And if we do, for example, apply a two-part foam on the inside, we'll insulate, but we're also really going to be changing the dynamics, the moisture dynamics of that old foundation. The dirt floor is always a little concerning because of radon. And the potential for that. So I would see, there are a few ways that she might help solve this. I mean, one is that we can retrofit some heat into that floor from the basement, but then we want to make sure that we do some things to keep the heat in the floor system.
Right.
So it's not just radiating down into that cold, uninsulated basement, but there are systems that can be installed there. So it's not too late to do something about it. That's what I would recommend.
All right. Let's try Joan then in Stoddard. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just got our roof redone, and we used to have our vacuum fan vented out a hole in the roof, and now they did it through the soffit, and I'm afraid it's going to go underneath the... That's my fire alarm.
Oh.
I'm cooking bread. I'm afraid it's going to go underneath... into the attic and get in moisture up in the attic. So what do you think about venting bathroom fans into the soffit?
It is a little riskier to vent into that soffit because the moist, the moisture needs to get out to the, to the exterior, and the soffit, is... The moisture is going to have to often pass around that overhang and then get up, out into the ambient exterior air. And so, for example, in the wintertime, we can have issues with ice damming in that area. We also can see the ill effects of this on the siding and on the soffit itself with all that moisture getting dumped into that space. And it's just, because that it's often hot and moist air, it needs to kind of rise and get away from the building. It's the least desirable place to do it. But sometimes it just, for whatever reason, that's why it is done. And my preference would be to put a typical vent, a roof vent on the house and let it go out at the roof. There are pros and cons to any place that you put that sort of a vent, but I would say generally the roof is the first choice, an exterior wall would be the second choice, and then the soffit would be the third.
Okay, and they claim that it goes up through the roof vent at the very ridge of the roof. It's a steel roof. Does that make any difference? It's sort of...
You mean they run there's a line that runs all the way
no,
up?
No, it's not a line. They just claim it goes along the top. The undersurface of the roof, and then it gets to the ridge, and then it vents out the little top vent.
So let's just clarify. So there's actually a termination at the soffit where you can see where the bath fan exits when you're on the outside of the house, or is it just...
No, it's just...
Oh.
No, it's just the
a little hose.
A little hose just sitting there, and you can feel some air coming out of the soffit.
From when you're in the attic, you're saying you can see it.
Yeah, you can see it if you're in the attic, or if you're standing outside, you can feel a little air coming out of the soffit. But they claim the rest will go up to the ridge on the roof.
So it's no termination. It's just stuck there and through the soffit holes. Yep.
Right.
So we need to change that. We don't want to leave that be as is. So there's no question that we want to put a dedicated termination, and the idea that the air is somehow really smart and it knows where to go isn't true, and it just goes where the wind blows, and that could be anywhere in that attic, really.
Yeah, and the reason we have this concern is that moist air, particularly in Wisconsin winter, when it hits wood, that's on the exterior of the house, that wood is cold, and so that moist air coming out of the bathroom is going to condense, and then it can rot.
Going to freeze right on the wood, probably?
It often will do that, and so we can have rotting, we can have mold. I've seen mushrooms growing. There are all sorts of crazy things that can happen. We just want to get that moisture to the outside.
Okay, so if we put a vent in the soffit, would that work?
That's a common strategy, and that's what we thought you had originally, I think, when Chad and I started speaking. And maybe if we did it in the soffit, best practices would dictate that we, put in a solid soffit 3 feet on either side of that termination. So even when you blow it to the outside through that soffit, it doesn't have a way to migrate back up into the attic space. So that would be best, just getting a termination in the soffit would be a whole lot better, and you probably wouldn't have a problem. And then if you have a handy man that's there to put in some solid surface soffits that's not vented for, like I said, a few feet on either side, that's a good way to go. I personally like the gable end wall and not out the roof. So if you are close to an exterior wall on the side of the house, what we'll call the gable end wall, and we terminate right out the side. I think Chad had that as his second. Maybe that's my first choice. But either way, it's that would be a good approach.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And an email from Joe. How do you find a good contractor to install a radon system in your home?
Well, radon remediation contractors are, it's kind of a specialized field. I would say that you'd want to cross-reference, doing some research either through the phone book or the internet on the people that are out there that provide the service, and then look to the various certifications and professional associations that those individuals might be associated with. You're always going to want to check references. I know in the Madison market, there are a couple of people that we work with that are very good at that. It's not magical, but it's also an area that kind of dances around on the edge of any sort of, it's not something that's inspected or that, for example, here are some of the things that you're going to want to look for. The motor, the fan that is going to be taking the radon out should be installed outside of the envelope of the home. So the fan, might get installed up in the attic outside of the heated envelope, or oftentimes it's mounted on the side of the house and there's an enclosure put on that. And the reason we put the fan outside of the envelope is that if the seals break on that fan, then the radon is not spilling into the house. So that's something.
That's
very important. And if the installer is looking to put that fan down in the basement, then that's an indication that maybe they don't fully understand what it is they're trying to do.
Chad, John, thank you so much. We'll look forward to your next visit. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin, our guests. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.